Dave. Dave. Come on. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at and that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. Our guest this afternoon is Barbara Lowe Fisher from the Vaccine Information Center. Barbara, are you there?
I am here.
Barbara, are you there?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Well, we seem to be having a little problem. Barbara, are you there?
Yes.
All right, fine. We had just a little problem there. And I think probably, Dave, this is working fine. I just had the wrong earphones on. We had a little discombobulated here. Anyway, Barbara Lowe Fisher from the Vaccine Information Center, and she's going to bring us up to date on what is really going on with the vaccination program here in America. And certainly we find ever-increasing numbers of autistic children here in California, all across the country. And, of course, they say, well, obviously it's not the mercury, because we took the mercury out of the childhood vaccines, not mentioning that they left the mercury in vaccines that are given to children. But certainly tell us what's going on as far as autism, as far as the whole effort to, you know, to educate people about the dangers of vaccines.
Well, I think that there is the Internet certainly has brought a lot of information to the public that they didn't have access to before. I mean, if you really want to do research into vaccination and infectious diseases, all you have to do is go on the Internet and you have access to the library, the medical library information that formerly only doctors could get if they worked for a hospital and went into the hospital medical library or they went down to the Library of Medicine. So it's really changed everything because we now have access to information that we didn't have before as ordinary citizens. And so it's getting harder for public health officials and doctors to convince people to take risks with pharmaceutical products and vaccines without them going home, doing their own research, and coming up with information that challenges some of the assertions that doctors have been making about the safety of pharmaceutical products like vaccines. So I think it's a very different day than when I started doing this work back in the early 1980s. I mean, it was then you had the post office, you had the telephone. You didn't have all of the tools that we have today. We didn't have cell phones. We didn't have personal computers. I think I got my first personal computer around 1983 or 4, and I was one of the only ones, my friends, that had a personal computer. Now we have the ability to communicate and get this information. So in the area of vaccination, definitely parents are asking their doctors more questions about vaccines, vaccine safety. We have tripled the numbers of doses of vaccines today that we were giving my children back in the 70s and 80s. And so doctors are getting very annoyed that they're being asked so many questions. But as more and more children get more vaccines and as more and more children become chronically ill and disabled, parents have a right to ask a lot of those questions, and they're not getting very satisfactory answers back.
Well, you know, the average doctor suddenly keeps being told, well, they're against us, you know, and here we are, we're trying to do what's right. But the average doctor has no idea the harm he is doing to many children, and certainly we'll talk a little bit more about that when we get back from the break. I think the doctors certainly need to be educated. I know a few of them are. But the vast majority of them, I think, are afraid to go against the establishment. When you do, there's a terrible price to pay. We'll be right back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay. Our guest this afternoon is Barbara Lowe Fisher from the Vaccine Information Center. And Barbara's been at this since the early 1980s, trying to educate people about the fact that certainly vaccines are effective, but vaccines many times are very dangerous. And certainly she's done some amazing work. And she's written a very interesting little book. Her last little book, I think, is vitally important. Barbara, did you ever get that book before you were...
We did. We did get it reprinted, and it's now available, and I can certainly make it available to you. So it's called Vaccines, Autism, and Chronic Inflammation, The New Epidemic. And what I did was I basically went into medical literature and looked for evidence. This is in 2006-07, looked for evidence that vaccines can cause the same kind of complications as the complications of diseases. I mean, after all, vaccines are created using the viruses and bacteria, lab-altered viruses and bacteria, that cause the diseases. It's not, it certainly is logical that the same kinds of complications would occur with the vaccines that occur with the diseases, and I found plenty of evidence that was true. I'll just, pertussis vaccine, the whooping cough vaccine, right now they're reporting whooping cough outbreaks in California and Oregon and other states, but this is nothing new. We have whooping cough outbreaks or increases reported every 4 to 5 years because whooping cough is a cyclical disease, and there are several toxins in the bacteria that causes whooping cough, the Bordetella pertussis bacteria that causes whooping cough, and toxins like pertussis toxin, endotoxin, et cetera, they are also in the vaccine because the vaccine is made of lab-altered Bordetella pertussis organisms. And even though they try to heat treat, chemically treat these organisms, there still is bioactivity of these toxins in varying degrees. And so you can have some children have a very bad reaction to getting pertussis vaccine. And some children have a very bad case of whooping cough, and others have a milder case. So it all depends upon the individual. We all are individuals. We don't all respond the same way to the challenge from a bacterial or viral disease, and we don't all respond the same way when we are injected with vaccines. So at any rate, this book looks at the evidence that at the root of most problems associated with vaccination is chronic inflammation. That is, when you get vaccinated, what happens is your body is...
Hold that thought, Barbara. Okay. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Barbara Lowe Fisher, and we're certainly talking about the danger of vaccines. And what Barbara points out is that when you get vaccinated, you are actually being given an altered course of this disease. And sometimes the alteration doesn't change it that much. And sometimes people will get very ill when they'll actually get the disease from the vaccine. But I thought one of the most important things that you brought out in your little book was the surprising incidence of, say, asthma in children who had been vaccinated in comparison with children who were not vaccinated. And the surprising number incidence of allergies, severe allergies in children who were vaccinated in comparison with those who weren't vaccinated, because, of course, the whole purpose of vaccination is to mobilize the immune system, mm-hmm. and that is this altered immune system that leads to asthma and allergies. Would you like to develop those ideas? Mm-hmm. Because I thought that was certainly such an important issue, and nobody else has ever pointed out that scientific studies have been done and definitely show that.
Mm-hmm. Well, yes, because what happens, as you point out, is when you get vaccinated, first of all, it's an atypical introduction of the lab-altered virus or bacteria, but your immune system doesn't react to the vaccine in the same way that the immune system reacts to when it's challenged by the natural disease. And so what can happen is with this atypical response, instead of having stimulation of both sides of the immune system, both the cell-mediated or innate immune system and the learned or humoral immune system, which causes the antibodies to be produced, what you have is vaccines mostly bypass the cell-mediated arm of the immune system and go directly for production of antibodies. And unfortunately, what vaccine makers have known but haven't really communicated with the public is that you don't get an actual true immunity. You get an artificial immunity with vaccination. All vaccination only produces a temporary immunity. You get the antibodies in the blood, but that does not necessarily correlate with true immunity, true protection. The only way you can get true immunity is having the disease itself. And that's not to say that you want to have all these diseases, but the fact is that really most people don't understand what vaccines actually do. So if the body is not responding in the same way to the introduction of vaccines, what can happen is you have a skewed response. People who are genetically predisposed to allergy or autoimmune disorders, they already have genes which predispose them to that kind of disorders, they can have a particular problem with vaccination that is, after all, atypically manipulating the immune system. And what happens to them is they get stuck on chronic inflammation. That chronic inflammation can affect different parts of the body. For some people, it affects the respiratory system. They become asthmatic. For other people, it affects the joints. They can have chronic rheumatoid arthritis or lupus. A lot of the girls who are getting Gardasil vaccine, the new HPV vaccine, a lot of them are reporting inflammation in different parts of the body, not only the brain, which is probably the classic inflammation that has been present since the smallpox vaccine, is inflammation of the brain that can cause chronic brain problems. DPT vaccine also caused a lot of children to have inflammation of the brain that became chronic. And so, you know, it's very, because they have not done the research into defining who is at higher risk than others for having a problem with vaccination, you really are playing roulette when you get vaccinated. It's up to all of us, really, when doctors tell us that we should get all these vaccines. You have to sit down with the doctor and go over your personal and family medical history. If you have a medical history in your family, or you yourself have had a problem with severe allergies or with immune system dysfunction, it looks like you may have some autoimmunity going on, you have to be very careful with getting vaccinated. And if you do, and you have a health deterioration, that is, you have new allergies or you have new health symptoms that are negative, don't let the doctor tell you it's all a coincidence, because sometimes, a lot of times, it's not just a coincidence. A lot of times, it's due to the vaccination you got.
But I thought the most interesting thing was that you pointed out, I think that the allergies were 9 or 10 times were more common, and asthma was 9 or 10 times more common in the children who had been vaccinated, comparing them with children who hadn't been vaccinated. I'm sure
that's right. That's right, and that's, we actually, the National Vaccine Information Center, my organization, cooperated with researchers at the University of Chicago about a decade ago, and what they did is they came into our database, which is the supporters of the National Vaccine Information Center. We have members who have never received any vaccines at all, people who are partially vaccinated, and people who have gotten all the government-recommended vaccines. So our membership was a very rich source of data. Now, they were totally blinded. They did a survey of our membership, and it was blinded. They went through the IRB process. It was all done according to scientific standards. And what they found out was that there was, I think it was 8 to 11 times more self-reported asthma and hay fever in the children who had remained unvaccinated.
And I think that is such an important thing. I mean, you know, it is not like Lipitor. You know, the difference between the people dying with Lipitor, getting a heart attack with Lipitor, is about 1%. But they say, oh, well, but the difference between 3 and 2 is 30%. So we're going ahead and giving people Lipitor because there's a 1% improvement in your chance of getting a heart attack. And they say, this is really effective. And yet here we're talking about 8 to 12 12 times?
Mm-hmm.
8 to 12 times more. This is not percentage. This is 8 to 12 times more allergies and asthma. But they have to suppress that, because if the parents realize that they're going to damage their children for life by getting them vaccinated, 1 in 9 American children has asthma today. Mm-hmm. 1 in 9, according to the government statistics. Mm-hmm. And they say the figures are going up. We just can't figure out why it is, but we can assure you it isn't the vaccination. How can they assure us? They're lying. Because
well,
they have access to your information as well, don't they?
Well, certainly. I just went into the medical literature. The study that we did, that we cooperated with the University of Chicago, was published in the medical literature. This is all, this information is there. It's very easy to connect the dots, but I think there's so much money. These pharmaceutical corporations have such a big influence on Capitol Hill with the politicians, as well as they are very much involved in vaccine regulation and policy making. I've been calling for a firewall to be built between the pharmaceutical companies and the regulators and policymakers in the government. There should not be a partnership between the pharmaceutical companies and government health officials that are supposed to be regulating these vaccines for safety. That's a conflict of interest. And yet there's a declared partnership now, as of the mid-2000s, the passage of the BioShield legislation in 2005, that there is a declared partnership between the federal government and the pharmaceutical corporations.
But, of course, this is to the detriment of the children. I mean, isn't anybody in government concerned about the children? I mean, here we hear all this talk from the officials, oh, we're so concerned about the children. They've destroyed the lives of millions of children with autism. I mean, how many children have autism? How many children have asthma and allergies totally unnecessarily? How many have juvenile diabetes, which is an autoimmune disease? How many of them have inflammatory juvenile arthritis?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how many children's lives have been destroyed by this, and even more than that, how many of our children have learning disabilities,
mm-hmm.
and suddenly neurodevelopmental abnormalities? Where is the outcry?
1 in 6 American child is now diagnosed learning disabled. It's an epidemic of chronic disease and disability, and I think it's only going to get worse until the federal health officials and doctors, and certainly the medical organizations in this country, take the blinders off and look at what's happening. And you can't leave vaccination off the table, not when we've tripled the numbers of doses of vaccines we're giving our children in the last quarter century. We've gone from 7 to 16 vaccines. We've gone from 23 doses to 69 doses. And now children are vaccinated all throughout childhood, from 12 hours of age in the newborn nursery through 18 years of age. And the CDC in the last few years has declared that every single American should get a flu vaccination from the time they're 6 months old through the year of death.
But, of course, that contains mercury, and it contains aluminum, and both of those are toxic to the brain.
Well, the mercury-containing flu vaccines, that's right. In 1999, the FDA and the Environmental Protection Agency directed the vaccine manufacturers to take mercury preservatives by Marisol out of childhood vaccines. They did it for every vaccine except for influenza, and diphtheria, tetanus still has mercury as well. But now the influenza shot, which they're refusing to take the mercury preservatives out of, there is some mercury-free vaccine that is being made available every year, but it's a very small amount. So most influenza vaccines still contains mercury. Now they're saying that every single American from 6 months of age through the year of death should get a flu shot every year?
And, you know, I think it's the most amazing thing that they took the mercury out of the childhood vaccines, but they left mercury in vaccines given to children. And you talk to the average pediatrician, they don't know that.
No, they don't know that. They've been told that the mercury doesn't harm children, the mercury in the vaccines. Now, the governments all over the world have passed laws to limit the mercury exposure to humans, but not in vaccines. That it's like you can't get mercury any other way, but it's okay to get it in vaccines.
And of course, it's not only that it affects the mind, it also affects the reproductive system. And this is what most people don't understand. And we're vaccinating all these little black and brown children throughout the world with mercury-containing vaccines, mm-hmm. toxic amounts. And many of them, of course, will influence the reproductive system. Have you ever seen that wonderful talk that Dr. David Ayoub gives on mercury?
Well, Dr. Ayoub presented at our national, at our conference in 2009 that the MVIC hosted.
Well, that was on aluminum.
On aluminum, yes. I have not heard his Mercury talk.
Well, I will be sure to send that to you. We're going to be right back in just a moment with Barbara Lowe Fisher. Ladies and gentlemen, this is such an important subject, and you need to get the information. I will try to remember tomorrow to send it to you. We actually had David about 3 years ago, and he gave that the talk on Mercury. It was one of the most devastating talks, and he had a CD-ROM with thousands of pages of documentation. He's a very, very meticulous researcher, and we're pretty, very fortunate to have him.
Yes, he's a very interesting man. I agree.
Well, let's get Sydney back to the situation. Now that the H1N1 vaccine program is over and the epidemic is over, I understand they're going to have to destroy 40 million doses of the H1N1 vaccine. And I felt so sorry, you know. Somebody has to pay for this. Who's paying for these 40 million doses of vaccine that are now disabled they're going to have to get rid of?
Well, the American people, I'm sure, are going to pay for it because the American people paid for the vaccine to be purchased. That came out of under the vaccine program the federal government, is in charge of. So, yes, they're going to have to also dispose of it, most of it, under hazmat conditions, which will be more expensive because you cannot pour a vial of vaccine that contains mercury down the drain. And you cannot dispose of it in ordinary garbage cans because it's considered too toxic to dispose of unless you dispose of it under hazmat conditions, which is kind of interesting in that they say that it doesn't hurt people to inject it into them, but you can't dispose of it in the environment unless it's under hazmat conditions.
Now, what is hazmat? I'm not acquainted with that.
Hazardous material.
I see. So basically, you can't pour this into a drain. You can't put it in the garbage, but it's all right to inject it into our infants at 6 months of age.
That's right.
Isn't that a little contradictory, paradoxical?
I would say it's an amazing fact.
Are you having any luck getting your information out to the public? You know, because the biggest thing is, as people are beginning to learn about this, more and more parents are learning, and more people are refusing to take the vaccines. In fact, they had a terrible time with the H1N1 vaccine. They were threatening in the state of New York to fire the people who wouldn't take it, and they just said, "We're not going to do it." And they backed down.
Well, I think that it is becoming more difficult to get the information out in the traditional channels through the mainstream media. And actually, we were able to get our information out in the 80s and 90s much more easily through the mainstream media than we are right now. Excuse me. We have a very high temperature here in the D.C. area, and the air quality is very bad, and I'm kind of reacting to it today. So it is harder and harder to get mainstream reporters and media that's heavily, the pharmaceutical companies really heavily advertise, in the broadcast media, network television, to some degree commercial radio, as well as in magazines, et cetera. So it is hard to get the information out. The Internet really is where we're making most of our inroads. Our website, www.nvic.org, has a lot of traffic, and that's great. I mean, we're one of the oldest health websites on the Internet, and so we have a fairly significant presence there, and most people who are researching vaccines will eventually end up on our website. So the Internet has helped us get the word out, and we do outreach in communities. We do public speaking. We have brochures, we have books, et cetera. But I'm hoping...
Hold that thought. We'll be right back with all of our stations on board. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly our guest is Barbara Lowe Fisher, who's the head of the Vaccine Information Center. And if you haven't been to their website, nvic.org, nvic.org, that's the National Vaccine Information Center, you need to go there and get her information. Barb is saying that certainly because the pharmaceutical companies are advertising so heavily on television and in magazines, etc., why, of course, it's very hard now to find a television networks or certainly of reporters who will write articles telling the public the truth about the terrible danger of vaccines. Ladies and gentlemen, we've crippled, you know, millions of American children. One in every nine American children is asthmatic today. And of course, you find that's 10 times as many as 10 times as many, or 8 times as many as children who are not getting the vaccine. So, I mean, imagine how many children have allergies that are totally unnecessary because we've altered their immune system. How many children have juvenile diabetes? How many people have learning disabilities? One in six children has a learning disability, and you do not see those incidents in children who are not taking the vaccines. And yet, of course, Barb is having a hard time getting the word out to regular channels. But fortunately, the Internet is there. So if you care about your children, if you care about your grandchildren, go to NVIC.org and get them to go as well. Do we have any idea how many people are refusing to take the vaccines? I was very encouraged by what happened with the H1N1 vaccine. It looked to me like they only got 60 or 70 a million doses of that out, despite all of the massive propaganda program that they utilize to try to frighten people into taking this unnecessary and dangerous vaccine.
Well, it was the Internet and it was radio. It was talk radio along with the Internet that really got the word out to people and in America and around the world. It wasn't just Americans who said no thank you. It was really also the European countries. They're trying to turn vaccine back into the companies that sold them the vaccine ahead of time, and it just wasn't used. And there was a big scandal at the World Health Organization. Some of the leaders of the health leaders in different European countries challenged the World Health Organization's declaration of an international public health emergency. And of course, this country declared a national public health emergency. And all this vaccine was purchased, and everybody was told, you know, they needed to get it. But most people realized that the disease, H1N1, swine flu, was just not this terrible disease, that infection that they had been led to believe it was. And so I really credit, we did our first article on it within a week of the declaration being declared in April of last year. And we just kept on putting the information out, as did a lot of people. I know you did radio shows as well. And I think that the people being educated just said, no, thank you. And I think that it's going to be very hard for public health officials to create that kind of hysteria again very soon, because people will remember. They cried wolf when they shouldn't have.
Well, of course, they kept telling us, oh, you know, millions of people are going to die, you know, throughout the world. And then they finally said, well, maybe 90,000 are going to, possibly 90,000 are going to die here in America if the people don't get the vaccine. They claim that about 12,000 people died. Do you feel that figure is accurate?
I don't, and I'll tell you why. I think in the world, they estimate about 18,000. Now, how can the most technologically advanced, richest country in the world that has more health care than anybody else have 12,000 out of the 18,000 deaths that occurred? That doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
Well, of course it doesn't. Basically, I went to the CDC website, and they said that the incidence of death was about 0.08. Less than one per 100,000. So basically they were lying to the public because they had to justify the scam. But a lot of people made a lot of money. My understanding is that some of the people in the World Health Organization were working for the pharmaceutical agents, companies that made billions of dollars on this scam.
Well, and that's true. And also you had the companies who were pressing the government to fast-track adjuvants, oil and water adjuvants, squalene adjuvants that can cause a lot of autoimmunity. They've been known to cause autoimmunity. We protested that. We said there is no public health emergency. You cannot justify fast-tracking these unlicensed squalene adjuvants. We were able to stop that as well, but they aren't going to give up.
Well, let me tell you that I think you did a great job, because I talked to the people from GlaxoSmithKline and Friends, and 3 weeks before the vaccine was released, they didn't know whether it was going to contain the adjuvant. And I said, how can you be going to put out this vaccine? You don't know whether it's going to have an adjuvant. Well, they had it already, and they're going to add it. And at the last minute, they backed down because they were afraid that your information and the information you put out by others was going to so inflame the American people about the danger of the adjuvant, so they put it in Europe. But they didn't put it in the United States, and I think you saved the health of literally millions of people because of it. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Do you still have that 60-minute program with Mike Wallace that you had posted on your website? Is that still up there about the swine flu epidemic back in, what was it, 76
yes,
or something?
Yes, that's still up on our website.
That is a very, very important piece because, of course, it's entirely different than they're telling us now. You know, and of course, the fact that there were hundreds of people who died, according to Mike Wallace, and yet today they say, oh, well, only about 25 people died. But we know that they lie, and if once we can get the American people to understand that you can't believe a thing they say, at that point, people are going to begin perhaps to question what's going on.
Well, I think the myth that vaccines are going to save the world from disease is a myth that has died hard, is dying hard. The magic bullet that somehow vaccines are going to protect us from all these diseases is there's always a price to pay. For every action, there's a reaction. And every time you use a pharmaceutical product, you have to realize that it carries risks, and some people are going to be hurt. Now, I think a lot more people have been hurt by mass vaccination policies than the doctors ever thought would happen. I think that they believed what the companies said. I think they believed what the government said, and I think the public health officials have really put blinders on. They're ideologically committed to eradicating all infectious disease from the earth with the mass use of vaccines. But they never stopped to consider if that was a biologically wise thing to do or even possible to do. You know, you look at these pertussis outbreaks, you know, that are being reported around the country this summer. And when you really go in and look, you see into the medical literature, you see that the vaccines, whether they're the whole cell pertussis vaccine, DPT or DTaP, the newer version, they have not been able to control whooping cough. No matter how many people are vaccinated in a population, they just can't do it. Why? Because the organism has mutated to evade the vaccines. And because another relative of pertussis, B. parapertussis, which is not covered in the vaccines, is on the rise. It is filling in that niche, and it is causing perhaps 30% of what looks like whooping cough is actually parapertussis, for which there's no vaccine. And yet every time these health officials report, oh, there are whooping cough outbreaks, they point the finger at, they say it's unvaccinated people. No. These vaccines are not effective.
Hold that thought. We're going to be back here in just a moment with Barbara Lowe Fisher right here at Radio Liberty, and this is a vitally important subject. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Barbara Lowe Fisher, and I'm going to suggest you do not call in because our telephone answering service is not operating. Hopefully, we'll be able to get it replaced by the end of the week. But for the time being, why, you're just going to have to hold your calls. If you have any questions, you can call us off the air. But right now, of course, our guest is Barbara Lowe Fisher of the Vaccine Information Center, the National Vaccine Information Center. Barbara, would you get your website out? Tell people to go where they will get if they go to your website.
Well, we have a huge amount of information on our website at nvic.org. There's so many. We go back so many years, and we have archives and we have information about things like before you vaccinate, ask 8 questions. So there are 8 questions you can ask before you go to the doctor when they want you to give your child so many vaccines. We have information about the question, are we over-vaccinating our children? There's a brochure there that you can download and you can read about the ingredients in vaccines and the schedules that are being recommended. We link in our resources to everyone. I mean, we believe you should know what the CDC is saying, what the AAP is saying. We're not afraid of linking to sites that we think are not giving you the whole, all the information. But we don't like to censor information. We like to make it everything available because we believe in the ethical principle of informed consent. That is, you have the right to have full information about the risks and complications of infectious diseases and the risks and complications of vaccines and be able to make an informed choice. We're not going to tell you what to do. That's your responsibility to get the information and make up your own mind.
Well, last year, I think it was, why Baxter had a seasonal flu vaccine they were going to release in Europe. And apparently the Czechoslovakian health authorities checked it on ferrets. They all died, and they found out that there was a deadly avian flu virus in there. This is the avian flu, or deadly, doesn't affect people unless you inject it into them, but this would have killed an awful lot of people. And Chris Baxter said, oh, shucks, we don't know how that happened. Sorry, I mean, you're talking about millions of doses of that they were going to give. Did we ever get anything more on that story?
We didn't, but, I mean, it is an open question about where this H1N1 swine flu, how it cropped up, because it is a bird-human swine or pig hybrid virus. And it's kind of unusual that there would be that kind of a combination that would crop up all of a sudden. So there have been some who have alleged that it was really a virus that got out of the lab, and that maybe the reason that the World Health Organization and the health officials panicked, went into panic mode, was because they didn't know exactly how the virus was going to act. Other people have said, oh, you know, it occurred, and they just wanted to do a test run, a sandbox exercise about how would the world react when they declared a pandemic emergency. Where were the loopholes or the weak parts of the program? And certainly they went through this drill. We all went through this drill. I remember in April and May of last year, you would go to the grocery store or the drugstore and you'd see your neighbors and, you know, fellow citizens with masks on. I mean, people were absolutely panicked. People were being detained on airplanes. They were being put in hotel rooms. They were being quarantined. It was really bizarre. And, of course, it turned out to be a fairly innocuous virus that the government still says affected children and young adults more seriously, but by and large didn't end in even by their own figures, is in as many deaths as they say occur every year from the regular influenza, the seasonal influenza, which they say kills 36,000 people in America a year. They're saying 12,000 were killed by H1N1. I don't believe the 36,000 figure. And the reason I don't believe the 36,000 figure and their figures on influenza deaths is because they lump in cases of pneumonia and what looks like influenza in the influenza figures. And the way that was revealed last year in 2009, in the summer 2009, is they were lab confirming cases of H1N1 in the first couple of months. By the middle of the summer, they stopped lab confirming, and they actually told the states not to lab confirm any cases of what looked like influenza coming in. Why? Well, I think because, you know, they didn't really want to admit how many people were actually being lab confirmed. I don't think the numbers were as big as what they originally thought they were going to be.
Well, basically, there was this woman from CBS, and she actually got a Freedom of Information Act, and basically she found, I mean, here the CDC is saying, well, 98% of all the people with flu is H1N1, and she got their figures from the various states. Mm-hmm. I think one state had 17%, but in California and Georgia and one other state, it was all 2% or 1%, and all the rest were other forms of flu, and they knew that, and they were lying to the American people. Why aren't government officials held responsible to be honest? Why? How can they get away with lying when, of course, we lie to them? Why it's a crime? They lie to us. Why it's just, they seem to be so above the law.
Well, I think that I agree that we need to have more boundaries put on health officials. I think we need boundaries put on the labs that are conducting research into vaccines using very highly pathogenic organisms. I think that scientists and doctors and health officials in this country have been given too free of a hand. It's as if they are not, should not be accountable to anyone, and that anything goes. And the people, and who pays the price for that kind of thing? In the end, it's humanity. In the end, it's us. And so I think this sort of elitist attitude, arrogant attitude, that they should be able to do whatever they want to do without having any, being accountable to anyone or having any boundaries put on them has got to stop, because we're going to pay a bigger price than we ever imagined if we don't start to draw those lines right now.
Barbara, I think we've already paid a price for the destruction of the lives of millions of American children, and they know what they've done. I mean, and they're covering this up, and if you work for the government and you tell the truth, you are in real trouble. When I was involved with the AIDS epidemic and trying to treat it as a regular disease, I was very well known here on the West Coast for my positions. I had public health officials come to me and say, Stan, we know what you say is right, but we can't back you publicly, but you keep up the good work. And these are guys who are getting paid, and I don't fault them. They've got children, they've got wives, they've got if they spoke out, they'd lose their job. And certainly this is what happened to Andy Wakefield. I know you've been in touch with Dr. Wakefield.
Yes,
very courageous.
I actually spoke with him today.
And certainly he paid the ultimate price. I mean, he was forced out of England. They've gone after his medical license. Is he able to get work here in the United States?
Well, I mean, I think he's exploring several options. He's just written a book, and that was published in the last month or so, telling his story, at least part of his story, the early part of what happened. And you know, I'm hoping that he will be able to land a position somewhere. But yes, they've made it extremely difficult for him. They make it difficult for anyone in the medical profession, as you point out, who does not salute smartly and go with the party line. If you're an independent thinker, if you've discovered something that you think is wrong and you follow your conscience and you try to make it right, you're punished for it. And of course, that's very dangerous, because that means that people of conscience in the medical and scientific professions and public health professions are, because they want to put food on the table, because they don't want to be ruined professionally, often remain silent. You know, you are unusual in that regard, because I'm sure to some degree you knew the price you were going to pay, but many people just can't see, don't have the strength, and don't have the ability to do that.
I think it was so interesting during the height of the H1N1 epidemic, when the local radio station, good outreach, said 10,000 watt station, but they asked me if I would debate H1N1 vaccine. I said sure. You know, they went to the local public health officer, to all the officials of the state of California. They went to the local doctors. They could only find one doctor just out of training, and she was back in New England someplace, taking her training in pediatrics. She was the only one who would go on radio and debate the program that was being pushed out of people. And of course, I felt sort of sorry for her. She didn't even know that there was mercury in the H1N1 vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
And another thing, of course, that really bothered me about that was the fact that they were forcing this onto pregnant women. Where I read all of the brochures from all of the companies who were producing the H1N1 vaccine, and not one of them said there were any studies that showed it was safe, and they said it shouldn't be used except under the most serious a dire circumstances, in effect. And yet the CDC was recommending this. Mm-hmm. Do we know about any women who had complications of pregnancy pregnancy after taking the vaccine?
Oh, absolutely. If you go on our website, we have at the top, you'll see something that says search the vaccine reaction database. And there's a MedAlert system that was developed by a man who is an expert in software, and he takes the CDC data. Actually, I know CDC researchers that use this MedAlert system when they're doing their own research into the VAERS system, the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System that the government operates. And you can go in there and you can, select H1N1 vaccine, and you can read the accounts of women who spontaneously aborted their babies. Their babies suffered miscarriages in all three trimesters within hours, days, or a week after getting the vaccine. Now, there are also stories on the Internet that you can find on some websites where they talk about this. But we still have not seen the results of the studies that that NIH said they were going to do on pregnant women with H1N1 vaccine in 2009. There were a very small number of women that they said they were going to test, pregnant women. And those results have still not been published, to my knowledge. And I looked about a month ago. I still couldn't find anything. So that vaccine was basically put out there and recommended to be used by pregnant women without any knowledge as to whether or not it was safe or not.
And an awful lot of women lost their children because of it.
Well, it certainly, there are certain of the reports are there. I mean, women have miscarriages for all kinds of reasons, but, it's very disturbing to have these women who were being pressured to get this H1N1 vaccine and the seasonal influenza vaccine as well, two shots. Because remember, back in 2009, they were saying get H1N1 plus a regular influenza shot. They were telling children to do for children as well, and we've never given our children this two different kinds of flu shots.
But
you
were to get the H1N1 and the seasonal, and then if you were 6 months old, you were to get them again in 6 weeks.
Yep.
To stimulate the immune system, there is no evidence that it would work. Oh, but you were giving these kids about between 50 and 100 times the amount of mercury, approved of by the EPA. Why would you do something like that?
I know it's really, to me, it's kind of a zealous sort of mindless belief in something that is a policy that has not been proven scientifically to be safe. The studies just are not there. The science is not there. And I don't understand why people don't, there's the old saying, trust but verify. I mean, at some point we really do have to demand of our public health officials and these vaccine companies that they must prove, they must not just put it out there and ask us to believe, to have faith.
Well, now, of course, when they gave the H1N1 vaccine in Europe, they actually added the adjuvant. They added the squalene to the vaccine.
Yes.
And do we know whether they've any results from autoimmune disease? Maybe it takes many years to develop these autoimmune diseases, but every time they've used the squalene, it has been a disaster. And certainly it was a disaster when they used it in the military troops back in the 50s and again in the 60s. And they had to stop it because they had so many neurological complications with our own troops when they used the experimental vaccines on them. Do we know what's happened to the people of Europe? They said, well, we've used it over here, people over 65 for years, so we're just going to give it to everybody. But it had never been tried in the general population. People over 65, a lot of them die. But do we have any idea how much damage or if any damage was done from the squalene in Europe?
Well, of course, nobody, there are very few doctors who are going to write about it. But there are reports on the Internet about it. And by and large, the Europeans did not want this vaccine. So I don't think there was a huge uptake of it. You'd have to have studies like the NIH promised to do. Actually, some of the pregnant women that they vaccinated with H1N1, they did use a squalene. They did use vaccines that included squalene because they were all primed. They were pretty sure that they were going to put that squalene in there. But again, we protested and they didn't do it. It's not to say they won't do it in the future. So I have not seen any information published about the reactions in Europe. I've seen mostly that it was rejected it was rejected by a lot of people in Europe.
Well, I'm so glad that they did. And certainly people over there, of course, they have much more access to information in Europe than we have here. I mean, we have such tight control over access to information other than alternative radio and the Internet. And thank goodness for that, because I think we save the lives of literally at least the health of millions of people. We don't know how many died from the vaccine. We don't know, but we do know that a lot of pregnant women, or a fair number, they had miscarriages. But then they're going to say, well, but women miscarriage all the time. But they don't do the studies to prove it's safe.
Right. That's the thing. You can't just ask people to trust without proving. And that I was shocked when I saw that they were going to so aggressively promoted the vaccination of pregnant women with literally no studies.
Well, of course, what they kept saying was, we've got all these women, you know, in the hospital, in the intensive care of these pregnant women. They're fighting for their lives, and this woman died, you know, and they played, you know, on fear. And I talked to obstetricians who were afraid not to give it. I said,
know.
You ought to be afraid to give it, you know.
I know, they were afraid.
But the doctor said, well, if I give it, you know, that's just standard practice. If I don't give it and they get sick and they die, then I'm responsible.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, the CDC lied. They lied about the number of people because we've got their figures. Mm-hmm. The incidence of the disease was 0.08. This was, I think, the middle of December. 0.08. For 100,000. That means about 2,500 people died. And they told, 12,000 died, you know, in America. And, you know, I think there were about 600 people who died in Great Britain, 300 or 400, I think only 150 people died in Poland, where they absolutely refused to do anything to stop this dreaded disease, because the doctors there said, I think it would be a malpractice to get this vaccine, an unproven vaccine. Well, Barbara, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program, and what are the really important issues you'd like to leave with our listeners?
Well, I mean, I always say at the end of an interview that it's your responsibility to protect your own health and the health of your children. You can't really leave it to anyone else, and you have to insist with your doctor that you're a partner in making these important healthcare decisions, particularly a vaccine decision. You're going to get a lot of pressure. And you need to be strong and you need to be informed in order to be able to make those good decisions. Come to our website, mdic.org, and you can at least begin your journey there.
And that little book you say you do have available?
Vaccines, Autism, and Chronic Inflammation, the New Epidemic. If you become a donor supporter member of MDIC, we'll send you a copy. I can't remember what category it is, but you can get a copy of A Shot in the Dark, the book that I co-authored with Harris Coulter in 1985, about DPT vaccine and whooping cough, as well as this new book, Vaccines, Autism, and Chronic Inflammation, the New Epidemic. It's well worth getting informed. It'll help you with all kinds of healthcare decisions beyond vaccination.
Well, I really like the book. In fact, I wanted to carry it, but I couldn't work out anything with the people so you've actually reprinted it?
We have it, and if you call, we'll work that out. We now have it in stock.
All right, fine. I'm so glad you do, because it's so vitally important. And I thought, to me, the most important thing was this study that you did with the University of Chicago, where they'd actually compared the groups vaccinated and unvaccinated and saw the differences. Now, certainly you were going to do some other scientific studies. Did you ever get those underway?
Well, you know, it's been very, very difficult to get scientists who would come on board. They're very afraid. And so the study, we have put the money that we raised at our conference for the scientific research into vaccinated and unvaccinated in a separate account. We're waiting. We may have to engage scientists who will privately help us, but not have their names used until it's published. It's that kind of a climate, unfortunately, in this country, is that people are afraid to, in the medical profession, to actually deal with vaccine adverse events. So we're still working at it.
All right. Well, I appreciate the fact that you are, and I think it's such a tragic situation where scientists are afraid to come out with the truth or even to try to find the truth for fear that there'll be reprisals.
Yeah.
And it tells you a great deal about the tragic course that our country is headed today. Well, Barbara, I want to thank you for being our guest, and I hope we can get you on our other programs. I want to thank you for all the tremendous sacrifice you've made over the better part of 30 years, 25 years anyway, isn't it? You've been out there.
28 years, and I thank you, Dr. Stan, for the voice that you've been and the courage that you demonstrated when you decided that you were going to stand up and talk about these issues that are very difficult to talk about.
Well, thank you so much, Barbara. Our guest is Barbara Lou Fisher. God bless you. Thank you so very much for being with us.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, fine. Well, this is Dr. Stan. And if you're out there in the listening audience, we've got a couple of books. Oh, certainly we've got a couple of books by Neil Miller of vaccines, and so we've got his great big book on the vaccine information manual. So we've got two excellent books on vaccines. But we have certainly an excellent DVD. It's called Mercury Autism and the Global Vaccine Agenda. It's Dr. David Abe's talk, and Dr. Abe provides with us a free CD-ROM that's got literally thousands of pages of information showing that they know that they're destroying the minds of the children. They know exactly what is happening. They just don't want the American people to know what's happening. And then, of course, we have another DVD called Vaccines and Brain Inflammation, Vaccines and Brain Development, I guess it is, by Dr. Blaylock. So that's Mercury Autism and the Global Vaccine Agenda, and Vaccines and Brain Development by Dr. Blaylock. So the two separate DVDs, they are must-watching for if you are interested in what's going on. Then, of course, there's my talk. It's called The Specter Haunting America. And it simply goes into the statistics of what happens to children who are not vaccinated, what happens to children who are vaccinated, how do vaccines work, what about these two types of immunity, humoral and cellular immunity, and how does this work? And, of course, the biggest thing is, what happens when you use vaccines and you create an inflammatory state in the body, but you don't go to the third stage of immunization where of a response to infection where you turn off the immune system? What happens when you leave the immune system turned on and you get autoimmune disease? Why do you think we have so many people with rheumatoid arthritis and lupus and thyroiditis and certainly chronic colitis and all these autoimmune diseases? These are not happening by accident. You do not see them in this numbers. You only see a fraction of them, people who aren't vaccinated. Ladies and gentlemen, they're destroying the lives of our people. We are under attack today. And they know exactly what they're doing, in my estimation, but they don't want you to know. So you need to get this information. The telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. And you need, of course, the Specter Haunting America, and it's a very important talk, and it provides the information that you need to have, and you need to get your children and your grandchildren, because they're destroying the lives of our people. If you'd like to read the Simpson Wood Report, it was a CDC report, a meeting that was held in the year 2000 at Simpson Wood, Georgia, where, of course, these are not very smart people. They actually held a secret meeting, and then they took notes on it, and then they classified it top secret, but it's been released. We have that. We have, of course, the National Security Study Memorandum 200 put out in 74, top secret over the name of Henry Kissinger. It's eventually been declassified, talking about how the major thrust of American foreign policy must be population control. Population control. Do you think that's why they put the contraceptive material into the vaccines they gave to young women in Kenya and in the Philippines and in many other countries throughout the world so they couldn't have children? Yes, ladies and gentlemen, they put things in vaccines to prevent that, and they put things in that produce cancer. If you've never gone into the background of the story of the virus and the vaccine, the original polio vaccine, and SV40, we cover all of that, certainly in my talk, The Specter Haunting America. Our number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage is radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. Dr. Ayoub will be a speaker at our meeting on October the 17th, and we hope that you can come. We have had some very serious problems here with our computers and our answering machine. If you're in a position to help Radio Liberty financially, we'd certainly appreciate hearing from you. Again, our number 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. And please pray for America. Pray for revival, but pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection.